Good evening, everyone. It's time to take charge of your life. Hello, this is marriage and family therapist Eleanor Barbaro, your host, inviting you to take charge of your life on WDIY. The theme of this program is that so many events in life happen to us over which we have no control. Our only control is our response to life's situations. It is often said that 90% of life's events happen to us, and 10% is what we make happen. Tonight we talk about what happens to us when we are living normal, happy lives, enjoying our families, friends, and plans, when we are suddenly confronted with a diagnosis of cancer. My guest this evening is Israela Meyerstein, a licensed clinical social worker and licensed marriage and family therapist who has been helping families and couples for 40 years with separation, divorce, medical illnesses, spirituality, and healthy personal coping. Israela Meyerstein is the author of a very special book called A Bridge to Healing, Finding Strength to Cope with Illness. It's an inspiring book where she describes her own encounter with cancer in a way that says we can overcome the many challenging aspects of cancer once we step outside the limits of disease-oriented medicine, where the heart is seen as a pump, and when we enter the human-centered medicine, where we see the heart connects with the spirit. Bridge to Healing, Finding Strength to Cope with Illness is a book that provides a roadmap to get to the human aspects of healing. Israela Meyerstein describes her journey through diagnosis, treatment, and survival in a way to bring for all families and caregivers a source of strength and encouragement. Welcome, Israela Meyerstein, to help us take charge of our lives on WDIY.
Thank you for having me.
Well, you wrote this book in a way, Israela, that if I hadn't known you, I would consider you a personal friend sharing her intimate thoughts about what was going on with her with a diagnosis of illness and cancer. Was that your thought?
I felt that the reader actually was part of my own support team because I needed to communicate what was going on inside of me, my feelings, my thoughts, what I was trying to deal with. And it was very comforting to begin journaling when I was going through this difficult experience. And it was the journaling that actually turned into the book.
Well, that was beautiful. So many of us think about journaling. Some of us do it, and some of us just think about it, and you did it. And I'm so glad that you did, Israela, because it is a very personal encounter. How did you discover that you did have cancer? Was this part of an annual visit, or how did it come about?
Actually, I had just been to an annual gynecological visit probably a month before, and everything was pronounced fine. But I began to have a little bit of pinkish staining, and then eventually some what looked like pieces of tissue that really frightened me, and so I came in for an emergency appointment. When I got there, the nurse said, oh, you probably have a UTI, but I knew there was something else. And I said, no, we need to do a urine culture. So that was my first attempt to speak up on my own behalf. So she did the culture, and it turned out to have red and white blood cells. The doctor said we need to do a biopsy. All this is happening in pretty fast time. And the biopsy came back, and he called me and said, the biopsy looks bad, everything needs to come out, and we're scheduling surgery for you next week.
Oh, my gosh, that must have thrown you for a loop.
I would say it did.
So did you take his advice and schedule surgery for the next week, as he had suggested?
Well, my normal thought process would have been, you don't rush into major things. You think about them, you consult with some other opinions. But I really trusted my doctor. I trusted that he said this was very serious, and it had to be taken care of immediately, so I did.
And what were the results?
Actually, the next day I met with him and a gynecological surgeon who we would be working with, and they both explained more and prepared me for the surgery.
And what were the results of the surgery?
The surgery removed, had a hysterectomy, a removal of ovaries, removal of cervix, and the doctor said that I'll be fine.
And did you feel that that was accurate, that that was true? Did you trust him?
I did at the time. I thought, okay, he said we just have to wait a little bit for the pathology results, but basically you should be fine.
And how long did it take for the pathology results to come in?
Well, that was another part of the illness journey. The pathology results took over a month.
A month?
And one of the things that I think patients really struggle with is the amount of anxious waiting that they have to do in between tests and procedures, and a lot of worrying, a lot of fear. And the pathology results were apparently so complicated, they had to be sent to another local hospital, and they were actually sent up to Harvard for review. And it turned out that the cancer I had was very rare, 1 in 300,000. There were no clinical trials, no research, not even case studies. Mm-hmm. It was a kind of bizarre thing. And so they felt I should begin some radiation as a preventive measure to prevent recurrence, because they were concerned it was aggressive.
Were you comfortable with that thought?
I didn't know any better. And like other patients, we're not experts in medicine, so the doctor says this is what you need. I went actually to set up an appointment for radiation, and I met with the radiation oncologist who explained everything and scheduled the appointment for, again, the following week. And that same afternoon, I had a consult with an oncologist at a teaching hospital, and he basically told me that was the wrong approach.
Huh.
And this was a very uncomfortable meeting. I had to wait 2 hours to be seen, which is not uncommon today. When the doctor walked in, he extended a limp two-finger handshake to me, and he sat about 10 feet away facing me. And I wondered, does he think that cancer is contagious? It was a very uncomfortable situation. But he gave good information. He was smart, and he recommended very strongly that I did not start with radiation because it would kill the veins, and that instead I should do chemotherapy first. So here I was. It was a tie. One doctor said one thing, the other doctor said the other. So I decided I would go for another consult to break the tie, and I was able to get an appointment at my local hospital with a doctor who was just about to go on vacation. He came in his last day, and this doctor was entirely different. He sat down and he talked with me. He was very warm. He conveyed a real caring for me as a person, as a patient. He had actually taken extra time to come in early and go into the lab and brought in two other pathologists to study together what the results looked like, the actual set scans. And he said, I'm very concerned for your welfare. You must do chemotherapy first. And it will be the thing that helps the best. In these situations, treatment has to be individualized. And when I began to ask questions about statistics and what are the results, et cetera, he just said, just a minute, you're not a statistic, you're an individual.
Well, good for him.
And that sold me. And he scheduled chemo for a couple of weeks later, and then we began the process.
Well, if you've just tuned in, you're listening to Take Charge of Your Life. This is your host, Elena Barbaro, and this evening we are talking with the author of a wonderful book that many of you are going to want to have by your side. It's called Bridge to Healing, Finding the Strength to Cope with Illness. And I want to thank you for writing this book, Israela. It really, as I said at the beginning, it really feels to me as if you're writing to a friend or talking to a friend, and I felt part of your support system. So you had the good fortune to meet up with this doctor just before he went on vacation, who strongly suggested that you don't have radiation, but you start with chemotherapy first.
And have radiation after.
And have radiation afterwards. Did you follow his advice?
I certainly did. And not only was he convincing in the meeting with him, but he was known to come visit his patients while they're having chemo, just to give them encouragement. So I felt very confident in his approach. He chose chemical agents that were not your standard protocol. He individualized what he thought was the best for me.
So he gave you an individualized approach.
Yes.
Based upon what he felt was your in your best need.
Exactly.
That was excellent. That
yes.
was, you were fortunate.
I was very blessed.
Yes. Very often, and you know, we meet with physicians who are very busy, and some don't even look in you in your eyes. You know, they're looking at the desk or someplace over. So this, did this physician become an important factor in your recovery?
I definitely think his hopefulness, his optimism, and his concern, plus his skill, were very important at a time when a patient feels quite dependent on the know-how and the expertise of a doctor.
So how long did it take you to recover from the surgery and the...
The surgery required 6 weeks of recovery. I actually even began to go back to work part-time for a little while. And then I felt better, and then I began the chemo.
And how did the chemo impact on you?
The chemo, like for many people, has a variety of different side effects. I used to be knocked out for about a week, like a flu, and then I was fortunate to have another week or two of decent time in between.
So you didn't have chemotherapy weekly?
I had it once every 3 weeks.
Once every 3 weeks. So that gave you some time of recovery
yes.
in between
yes.
to only come back and get the chemo and go through the same
yes, same. And I'm one of millions of people who do this.
And after the chemotherapy, was there some good results?
The scans continued to show good results. And despite that, because of the aggressive nature of the cancer, they felt I should really go the nine yards and really do a thorough treatment. So after the chemo was completed, I had 7 weeks of radiation.
So you had 7 weeks of radiation following the chemo.
Yeah.
Yeah. And we're going to talk in the next part, we're going to talk about your recovery process. Who were your go-to people? How did, were you able to use family, friends? And you mentioned you have a beautiful section called the spiritual toolbox. And we'll talk about that. All the tools that you used for recovery when we return to take charge of your life on WDIY.
Do you have a car that you're trading in? How about an old truck or boat that's taking up space? Let WDIY help you get rid of unwanted vehicles and turn them into financial support for the station. It's a simple and easy process. We handle all the towing, title, and transfer, and you receive a tax deduction. Turn your vehicle into the programs you love on WDIY. To learn more, visit WDIY.org or call 610-694-8100, extension 7.
WDIY offers classical music 6 days a week, including Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. to noon, Sunday morning, 6 to 8 a.m., and Sunday evening, 7 to 9 p.m. WDIY Classics covers all eras from medieval and baroque, romantic to modern. Listen for birthday tributes to composers, interviews with local artists and conductors, and the classical events calendar each week. For more information, visit our website, WDIY.org.
Welcome back to Take Charge of Your Life. Hello, this is Eleanor Bobrow, your host. And this evening we're talking with Israela Meyerstein, who has written a beautiful book called Bridge to Healing and Finding Strength to Cope with Illness. And the book is not only beautiful, but there's a wonderful cover on the front just to introduce you. And there's a beautiful white bridge surrounded by beautiful blooming flowers. And it helps you to recognize that when each of us is confronted with some change in our lives, whether it's dealing with illness, we each have to walk over a bridge. And Israela Meyerstein has written this beautiful book giving us the tools and the inspiration to know that we can work with our physicians, our community, our people to overcome. Israela, tell us some of the tools that you used in your recovery and that you've also put in this book so beautifully.
Okay. Well, first I'd like to say that it actually takes a village to heal, and I didn't do it alone. I did it with the help of family, of supportive friends some of whom I call angels, some of the healing professionals who supported me along the way, friends, and being able to write about it. And then I have a whole range of tools that I've employed that come from a variety of traditions, from alternative and complementary medicine, such as acupuncture, homeopathy, massage, yoga, from creative expression, music, art, poetry, humor, inspirational wisdom, sayings that motivated me, nature, meditative approaches, and also from spiritual tools such as psalms, prayer, rituals, stories, and texts, and even trying to do a little bit of helping of others. So many, many things, but I would, if it's with your permission, I'd like to read one of the tools to give an illustration.
Yes, please.
When I first had my surgery.
On the first day of surgery, you had it. Did you have a prayer that you said for the surgeons?
As I was laying on the gurney before my operation, and around me were my gynecologist, my Jewish gynecologist, my Muslim gynecological surgeon, and my Christian anesthesiologist. I took out a prayer that I had tucked into my gown and read it to bless the doctor's work and pray for a positive outcome.
Did you do this out loud?
I did it out loud.
Oh.
Although my voice trembled while I was reading the words, the doctors listened attentively, and at the end they said, Amen. And I knew that they were there for me.
And by saying Amen, they showed they were a team.
Yes.
And that they were on your side.
And this gave me, this is an act of agency. I felt here I had taken the risk of doing something that some people might roll their eyes about, but it was very meaningful and strengthening for me. I felt it was a collaborative team now. We were all working together. And my son, who was about to start medical school, held my hand the entire time I was there. And it made me remember how important touch is to the patient. My gynecologist was massaging my toes, so I really felt taken care of before going into surgery.
Could you read what you wrote, what you said for the team?
The actual prayer?
Uh-huh.
Okay. May the one who blessed our matriarchs and patriarchs and all who seek to heal those who are suffering imbue them with courage, confidence, understanding, and compassion, so they may join in the work of healing. May they not surrender in despair, but engage in your work with wholeheartedness and devotion. Help them to accompany me throughout my journey, to speak with me, to listen to me, to be with me, so that together we may strive for a complete healing of body and spirit, soon and speedily, without delay.
Well, that was beautiful. That was, and I could hear them say, Amen. That was appropriate for each person, for any person, no matter
any religion,
any faith. Mm-hmm. That was beautiful, beautiful.
Okay.
And did you have, what were some of the, can you share with us a few other things that were inspiring?
Other tools.
Okay. One is laughter.
Yes.
We don't usually think of it, but laughter is a tool.
Yes,
and one
sure.
of the things I know that many of us feel is when you engage in chemo and radiation, one of the things we all fear is the loss of hair.
Right.
And this was for you a fear as well. Is that correct?
I was told it was going to happen. By the second treatment, I was keeping on thinking maybe I'll be an exception, but sure enough, it did happen. And one of the other tools besides humor that I used is I appointed one of my friends who, by email, to be my humor coach.
A humor
and
coach?
I asked her to send me stuff. She already was sending me jokes, and she sent me a wonderful joke about a subject that people often are very serious about. So I'd like to share that, and then I'd like to also share a prayer that I said to myself to strengthen myself during the chemo sessions.
Very good. Is that about hairs?
Yeah.
Oh, good.
Okay.
Go
so
ahead.
This is an anonymous parable called Three Hairs.
Three Hairs.
There once was a woman who woke up one morning, looked in the mirror, and noticed she had only three hairs on her head. Well, she said, I think I'll braid my hair today. And so she did, and she had a wonderful day. The next day she woke up, looked in the mirror, and saw that she had only two hairs on her head. She said, I think I'll part my hair down the middle today. And so she did, and she had a grand day. The next day, she woke up, looked in the mirror, and noticed that she had only one hair on her head. Well, she said, today I'm going to wear my hair in a ponytail. And so she did. And she had a fun, fun day. The next day she woke up, looked in the mirror, and noticed there wasn't a single hair on her head. Yay, she exclaimed. I don't have to fix my hair today. Attitude is everything. So
that is wonderful.
Chemo is nothing to laugh at.
No, it isn't.
And I remember watching the hairs fall out and moving from scarves to pieces to wigs. And I actually kept my wigs on probably a year after my treatments, just because of the lack of comfort and self-confidence being out in public again. But humor can help people a lot. And if it's okay, I'd like to read something about chemo, because I found I had never had chemo before, and I felt that it was pretty overwhelming. And the first person who took care of me was a very proper nurse, and she told me what was going to happen, explained everything. When it was time to draw blood, and many people have some difficulty when blood is drawn. And so I tried to guide her to likely spots that might work, because I am a little bit challenging. But she insisted on following her own ideas. So after her fourth failed attempt, she proclaimed, "My dear, you have feeble veins." I knew my veins were challenging, but neither I nor they appreciated this disparagement. Perhaps that was the moment when my inner spirit decided to create a practical spiritual toolbox to help me survive and cope. So I prepared myself for the next blood drawing, and as she began searching for veins, I closed my eyes and began humming a very special Hebrew prayer, which describes the divine creation of the human body with its vessels and channels that must open and close for proper functioning. And I was doing almost a meditative visualization as I watched my blood flowing through my veins. And it slowed me down. It comforted me. And the result was, actually, after that, I used that prayer every time. And ever since, when I have my blood drawn, it usually improves the nurse's batting average from 3 or 4 times down to 1 or 2.
So she only has to make 1 or 2pokes to find the right vein.
Yeah. She wanted to give me a port, and I really was trying to do it through veins so I could continue to swim and do some exercise outside of chemo. So I began coming to chemo sessions with a plan. I had a chemo kit, and it consisted of a CD visualization to use during chemo.
Which you played right in session.
Right in the, we're in my chemo chair.
Right.
Colored pencils and a doodling pad, some light reading material, music, and my soft healing pillow with the words, "Please God, heal her, please." I also brought my journal book with a beautiful covers design that said, "Go confidently in the direction of your dreams. Live the life you've imagined." I packed some of my own light snacks in case I didn't want to eat the hospital food. So all these things were tools that I collected in a little toolbox, and it helped bolster my strength and my desire to cope and fight this.
And you also were taking charge of your life.
Yes.
You had made a decision to stand for yourself.
Yes.
And
to speak up,
do what was comfortable for you by designing your own kit. By having music, by having prayers, by having, you were taking a stand for your own health, Israel.
Yes. And I had to do this at other times, too. I'm not usually a complainer, and they say that squeaky wheels get attention. But when I went through radiation, which was actually much more difficult for me than chemo, the circumstances of how it was administered, how I felt physically, and the situation in the waiting room where people were vomiting outside, and it was just so oppressive that I decided something was not working for my recovery. And I actually complained to my doctor and to the head of the department.
Of radiology.
Yes. I simply said, "This was my experience, and I don't think it's working for my health." And I was really amazed, the first, that I had done it, but also of the response I got, because people really do want patients to be helped. And so actually the week after I spoke up, they put a water fountain and some candies and more reading materials in the in the waiting room. So I really got reinforced for taking ownership of my healing and my recovery. Well, of course, with the support of the wonderful doctors, with God's help. Most of it I attribute to my fortune of being blessed. Friends, family, all the village that it was necessary to assemble to get through.
Well, that was beautiful. But, you know, very often we are surrounded by a village. But what you were learning was to take, to let them support you and mm-hmm. to find ways to have them support you. Very often we want to be supported, but we push people away unknowingly. Mm-hmm. And what you were learning to do, Israela, was to take responsibility for yourself and say, this is what I need. Even when you might have thought, for example, complaining in the, well, let's put it differently, not complaining,
speaking up,
informing people of what was going on in the radiation treatment room or what have you. And you were taking a stand for yourself. You were mm-hmm. letting people know.
Yeah, I think there's also another element. As a social worker in my profession and a mother, I am kind of like a caregiver a lot of the time. And one of the hardest things and the hardest lessons I had to learn early on, and it came from one of my friends who was an angel, was to allow yourself to receive help. Because people do want to help you. And if you feel like you're strong, that you can do it yourself, you won't accept the help. This is a situation where patients should allow people to help them.
So we have to open ourselves mm-hmm. to let people in who want to be helpful. And sometimes unknowingly or when we're in our own world, we don't realize we're pushing people away. And people, and then loved ones don't know how to respond or how to take care of us. So you're saying...
I don't think I pushed people away. I think I just wasn't in the habit of being on the receiving end of help. I was in the habit of giving help to others. And my friend reminded me, remember, when people help, you make them feel better too. So it is opening yourself up to people. And also as a patient, you have to discern and decide what help is helpful and what help isn't, and to sort of take charge of that as well.
Well, I want to thank you, Israela Meyerstein, author of Bridge to Healing, Finding Strength to Cope with Illness, for helping us to take charge of our lives through practical and spiritual methods of healing. You have written a book that can be a companion to all of us through spirituality as well as practical and therapeutic methods of healing. We would all be able to take charge of our lives if one of the practical suggestions that you make in your book could come true. That physicians, oncologists, nurses, radiologists, and all of the medical community could come together as one, as a supportive, integrative community to help each patient. And the other thing that you have firmly established is that we are all partners, and that we need to be partners with our Maker, with our families. I want to thank you for helping us to take charge of your lives. Quickly give us your website.
The website is www.bridge-to-healing.com.
Thank you again for listening. Thank you, Neil Heber, producer. See you all on the radio next Monday evening at 6:30 p.m. when I again invite you to take charge of your life on WDIY.